So this is our fourth in the four-part series on the Mary Heitkin Dumont University. And our topic is, of course, four lenses in the Bible. We saw the lens of Rashi, where there are different arguments. Most people would say he had the simple lens. But we argue that no, he had the lens of meaningful interpretation. That he thought if something was meaningful, he would put it in. Then we saw the lens of the truth that the Ibn Ezra was shooting for. We saw the lens of the Ibn Ezra, who we call the lens of truth, as some professors argue that he was that the ultimate arbiter of what is correct interpretation for the Ibn Ezra is truth, meaning it has to be true scientifically, and it has to be true linguistically, and then it's truly something through the lens of truth. Okay. And then we had the Ramban, who had the wide lens, that the Ramban tends to look at things less locally, whereas Ibn Ezra and Rashi tend to look at questions of word meanings and syntax, but rarely context, whereas Ramban, we saw not only his view of entire books of the Torah, but also he had certain principles that he thought were overarching principles. Tonight is the Sfatimah. And I changed my mind as I went from preparing this course till the end of the course as to which lens the Sfatimah had. Firstly, a word about the Sfatimah. His name is rarely heard, but his name was Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh Leib Alter. He actually changed his name at some point. There were some deaths in the family. He added the name Aryeh. His original name was Yehuda Leib. In any event, he was trained in a great family. His father was the Chidushi Harim. His father is often just known by the acrostic of his name. And Mayor Rothenberg, his name was. And his grandfather trained him so much so they said his grandfather would always say to him, "All right, come back and tell me, 10 new ideas." And he had to come up with new ideas all the time. And by the time he was 18, and the Chidushi Harim had passed away, his grandfather had passed away, they said, "Okay." He was an orphan. He was raised by his grandfather because he was an orphan. And he said, "All right, so now you're the Rebbe at 18. He said, "What do you mean? My uncle should be the Rebbe." So his uncle took over. But sure enough, his uncle got sick after a while. And they said, "Now we'd like you to be the Rebbe." Good thing they got him in, because he only, it seemed that his life was not that long, 57 years. But he got in a lot of amazing years. And he established the great Gerer dynasty. The Gerer dynasty was so big that no matter where you lived in Poland, you had some sort of connection with Gerer. Just for example, when I first met my wife for an official family dinner at my mother-in-law's house, they invited my sister-in-law. So my sister-in-law told her Gerer Rebbe story. I told my Gerer Rebbe story. My mother-in-law told her Gerer Rebbe story. Because everybody had a Gerer Rebbe story. It's an interesting story. But people had story because that's how big the Gerer Rebbe was. They say that on days when the Gerer Rebbe was speaking, you just close the door behind. On days when the Gerer Rebbe was speaking, particularly on Yontif, people would come from far and wide. The Poles had to add extra trains so people could get to the Rebbe. We have other associations with trains in Europe, but these were trains that were added so the Jews could get to the Rebbe. There were other Rebbes, but he's very big, and to this day, it's a very big Hasidus.
Okay.
A Ger. He's a Ger Rebbe. It was in the town of Ger.
And they got the name of Yeshiva as well?
He had a Yeshiva, right. What we should mention is that although we're going to be studying his writings on Chumash, because this class is about lenses on the Bible, he was also a great Talmud commentator. His commentary in the Talmud, I heard from no less than Rabbi Rosenzweig, who was a great student of in the line of Rabbi Salvechik, he said that the sharpness of the Sfatimah's comments, this rabbi's comments on the Talmud, are no less sharp and analytical than the Salvechik family themselves. So, although he's a Hasidic Rebbe, very mystical and very fanciful in his interpretations, when it came to Talmud, he was top notch. And that was true of the later Hasidim after the Baal Shem Tov. Later Hasidim all tended to be very learned, as they were in the Lubavitch movement and other movements. They felt that you should be spiritual, but also very grounded in the Talmud as well. Anyway, just to give you a picture of what it's like, he after Shabbos Yontif, he'd write up just very brief notes on what he said, and that's where we're going to get to this idea of the lens of association. That he uses an associative principle to comment. He'll start off with one point, which reminds us of another point, which is connected to another point, which connects to another point. And I'll give you an example, one or two examples here, of how one point connects to another. And that tends to be what he says. I find very often that I myself and other people who have found his commentary particularly fruitful in the last, I would say, last 20, 30 years, rabbis quote from Sfardim tremendously. I started doing it on my own. I thought I had this special Hasidic fetish, and it turns out, even though I'm not a Hasid, but it turns out that everybody was doing it, and English works have come out. A distant cousin of mine came out with, named Lef, came out with a professor at Columbia. He came out with one English edition of some of his comments, and the art school came out with wonderful edition of his holiday comments. You can get it. It's really, really terrific. And it just became very popular. Why? Because he has a lot of sort of one-line zingers that are just very fruitful, seminal kind of ideas that make you think. And it's very connected. He connected with his audience, understood. He spoke to the people. And we'll see that shortly. So it turns out that I want to talk about not just the lens of association, that he uses clever associations of one idea to another, which connects to another, we'll show in a moment, but also the idea of personal meaning, and that we'll get into it a little further, what I mean by that, a little later. Okay, so let's get going. I was tempted to share with you some thoughts that he has on Hanukkah, because I would say he's particularly clever when it comes to holidays. Probably had a much bigger audience, as I described before, but nonetheless, this course is about the Bible, so we're sticking to the Bible, but we're going to find a biblical passage he explained during this time of year, where he also connected it with Hanukkah. Okay, so let's begin. Let's go around, we'll go around, and let's get started. Go ahead. So, by the way, this is the whole passage, from here till the top of the next page. That's the entire message. Generally, his pieces are very brief. What you can do, and the work has not been fully done yet, is that sometimes he goes back to the same midrash. As a matter of fact, he almost always goes back. On any parsha, there are only five jumping points that he has. He always starts with the five particular rashis or midrashi that he starts with, and then each year he develops it differently. What would be interesting to do, and I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to do this fully here, I'll give you one little example, is to take it and say, well, how did he do it differently in 1877 versus 1897? And he always records what year he wrote it. So we're going to take something from 1877. Go ahead.
Okay. It says, as Kyle, Ezekiel 46, the gate of the inner chamber will be closed during the days of work, and on Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh it will be open.
This is Ezekiel's vision of the end of days, when the temple will be back and up and running, but things will be a little different. And one of the things is that the gates will be closed all week, like many synagogues, you know, except it will be open on the Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. Usually it's taken to mean that we're not worthy of being there all the time, only at that time, and then they'll be open. So now, you have to understand that this time of year, there's a Shabbos Chanukah. And on Shabbos Chanukah, sometimes it's also Rosh Chodesh. So, and Chanukah always has Rosh Chodesh, and it always has Shabbos in it. And Chanukah commemorates the fact that the Greek Syrians tried to prevent us from Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh and some other things like a bris. But we're already holding in several connections of Chanukah, Rosh Chodesh, and Shabbos. Continue.
Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh are the aspects of connections of the ideas.
This is a Hasidic expression, the Bechina. You take different aspects of things. The analytical Talmud has used this, that one law has two different aspects, and they also use it Kabbalistically. They're different bechinos, and sometimes they mean different sphirot, different Kabbalistic emanations. Go ahead.
Joseph and Judah and Israel.
Hallel.
And Hodah. Mm-hmm. Praise and thanksgiving. We can stir up these two aforementioned aspects.
Okay. So he's saying that Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh are special. Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh correspond somehow to Yosef and Yehuda. The word Yehuda has the word Hodah, thanksgiving in it. He says it through Hallel and Hodah, which are the two major things the Talmud says, that there are two things we do on Chanukah, two things for which Chanukah was instituted. Hallel, thanksgiving, and Hodah, praise and thanksgiving. Hallel and Hodah, praise and thanksgiving. And Judah's name is associated with thanksgiving. We can stir up these ideas of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh are stirred up through Hallel and Hodah, the two things we do on Rosh Chodesh. What do? We say Hallel, we say the Psalms of Thanksgiving, and in Modim, in the blessing of Thanksgiving, we add Al Hanisim, we add a prayer for Chanukah. So we do Hallel and Hodah, and that stirs up the ideas which are inherent in Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. Let's continue, Doctor.
It says, "Day Psalm of Thanksgiving 100. Come to his gates with thanksgiving, to his courtyard with praise. For through thanksgiving the gate is opened, and through Hallel, praise, one can dwell in the courtyards of Hashem."
So he sees two elements. We say in that daily Psalm of Thanksgiving we have after an early morning service, we talk about coming in Todah and Tehillah. So he finds a verse that again has these two expressions of Hodah, Todah, Todah, thanksgiving, and Tehillah, praise. Like maybe Hallel. And he also finds two things that happen. The gates, remember we said the gates in Ezekiel, the gates are only open on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. How are they open? They're open for Hallel and Hodah, which are parallel to Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. And the gate is open with Hodah, with thanksgiving. And Hallel will lead to something other than a gate. The gate opens to what? The courtyard. And the courtyard is open through the Hallel. So we have Hallel and Hodah with two types of thanksgiving, praise and thanksgiving. One leads you into the gate, and one leads you into the courtyard. Is there a difference between gate and courtyard?
Gates open, lead, and courtyard. There are two levels, one inside the other, as it says in Psalm 65. Happy is one who chooses and comes close to dwell in the courtyard.
Yes. Some Sephardic Jews would say this psalm before they daven, and mincha. But in any event, you're particularly happy if you come in the courtyard. That's the really big thing. You know, it's one thing to have the gate open. That's one level. But to get into the courtyard of God, that's even more exciting. That would be considered coming close. It chooses and comes close. If you're really close, if you're in the courtyard. So through Hallel and Hodah, we're going to get closer. So now don't forget, we're on the parsha that's talking about Yosef and Yehuda. So he's somehow connecting Judah, who has to do with thanksgiving. His name, Yehuda, sounds like Todah, sounds like Hodah. And Yosef somehow is connected to Shabbos. We'll find out in a minute. And also, Yehuda, one of the famous things he did was he admitted wrongdoing. If you recall, Tamar was accused of sleeping with someone before she was given off to be for marriage, something like that, and for levirate marriage. And then he admitted that it was he was the man who was with her. So he admitted. In Hebrew, the word admitted and the word thank are the same. Okay, so if your head is spinning, we're going to lay it out in a graph in a minute. But all these things are connecting. So we have the word Yehuda, has the word Todah. Also, he's famous for Hodah, for admitting, which is the same word as Todah, thanksgiving. And we're saying that through thanksgiving, you can open the doors. Through praise, you can get into the courtyard. So you can imagine that on Shabbos we open the doors, you can imagine the spiritual doors, we open the doors to God, and on Rosh Chodesh maybe we come into the courtyard. It's getting ready to be Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Chanukah. We're going to have Hallel and Hodah. We're going to have the two things that open the doors and the courtyard. We're going to have Hallel and Hodah with the praise and thanksgiving. We're going to say the Psalms of praise. We're going to give thanks during the Amidah. And so it's amazing what's going to happen here. We're going to be flying. We're going to have Hallel and Hodah, Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and we're reading about Yosef and Yehuda. So it's all coming together. I was looking for something that would be more interpretive of a particular passage, but I think, but here we're not interpreting a particular passage, we're interpreting the concept of Yehuda and Yosef from the Parsha, and then we're using association to connect it with a lot of other ideas. Let's continue.
Really. And in the Midrash, there were those who were chosen for Shem, and there were those who were brought close, even though they are distanced. And this is related to the aspect of offense.
Sometimes you get close with God because you deserve it. Sometimes you get close with God because it's a gift. If you get closest to God as a gift, then you have to give thanks because you don't deserve it. So, there are two types. Perhaps that corresponds to the Hallel and Hodah. Maybe if you say Hallel, that's someone who gives praise because he gets close to God and he deserves it. But someone who gives thanks is someone who's close even though he doesn't deserve it. Okay, let's continue, Lenny. No, and it says. And it says. Okay.
It says daily psalm of thanksgiving.
No. We're going forward. No, thank you.
I'm so confused.
And it says Psalms 148 toward the bottom.
Oh,
and it says Psalm 148. And it says Psalms 149.
149.
Yes.
The exaltations of God are in their throats, and the two-edged sword in their hands.
Okay, so this is an image from the daily Psalms. It's the second to last Psalm. And Ramot Kel Biguna, Vacher Pipio Bedna. Sort of an interesting image of sort of Sefer Vesayef, of a soldier, of a scholar, a philosopher, soldier, right? That on the other one hand, he has praises of God in his hand, right? So that's more like a Muslim. But in any event, praises of God in his hand, and he's got a sword, everything's got in his mouth, his throat, and then he's got the two-edged sword in his hand. Go ahead. But he's not going to interpret that it has to do with a sword. It has nothing to do with a sword. What is it? Go ahead.
Two edges, a little two mouths.
Okay, so in Hebrew, it doesn't say the edge of a sword. It says the mouth of the sword. Because, you know, swords can sometimes devour. So they're sort of like teeth. So they're also like mouths. So it says the mouths of the sword. Go ahead.
There are two types of praises you mentioned, hollow and thanks.
So in other words, the righteous that we mention every day in the psalm, second to last psalm, which who have this two-edged sword. It's not a sword. They have a two-edged tool. What's their tool? It's Hallel and Hodah. These are the two keys. These things, but again, the Talmud says, Hanukkah was instituted for Hallel and Hodah, for thanksgiving and praise. Those are the two keys. Those are the two things which a righteous person has in his hand. He has them, these two things, they'll open the gate for him to get closer to God, for him to go into the inner courtyard, for him to get closer even if he doesn't deserve it, etc., etc. Continue, Barbara.
Truly the meaning of two mouths is the opening of the heart and the opening of the mouth.
So you just keep going further with associations, right? That, well, the truth is we have two swords, so there's the phrase, he says, if you analyze praise, where does praise come from? Where does praise come from? Physically. It comes to the mouth. But really, you can't be thankful unless it's coming from the heart. And of course, you might say that praise doesn't have to come from the heart. But thanksgiving, or you could take it the other way, but you can imagine that there's a type of praise that as long as you say the words, it's good enough, right? You said thank you. Someone told you to say thank you. You said something. But there's another thank you that is truly thankful and it comes from the heart. So there are two elements of it. So it maybe the thanks that's undeserving, it's not really heartfelt, but if it's undeserving, maybe the heart, the one that's more heartfelt, it's deserving, so then you deserve to get into the courtyard. Okay, so continue. And then he alludes to something he wrote somewhere else. Go ahead.
In another place, he wrote that the covenant of the Ma'ori Yisod and the covenant of the tongue are called the two-mouth-edged sword.
Okay, so now we get a little bit Kabbalistic, and apparently this is a whole big topic within the Sfadim. There are articles about it that speaking of the bris that's taking place tomorrow, Rabbi Fromwitz's bris, there's an idea that there are two mouths, that there's the bris of, we have to watch, human being has to watch a lot of things. We watch different parts of our body, and we have to watch what we say, and we also have to watch other parts of our body as well. And And these two covenants of how we behave ourselves in different parts of our body, these are the two PPO, these are the two mouths, these are the two covenants that we have. And go ahead.
And these are the secret of Joseph and Judah, who are aspects of speech. And a hint to this is that Hallel and thanks are in Gematria 85 or 86, which is the secret of Ninah.
Now, in Gematria, he's not a big Gematria person, but here he happens to mention it. In Gematria, you can be off by one. Because it means like, let's say I'm worth 85, but then there's also me. There's my numerology plus the thing itself. So I believe it's off by one. But in any event, the halal hoda, if you take halal and take hoda, believe it or not, it's only 85. And Bris Mila is also 85. So that's just worth noting. Now, Joseph, what's Joseph's great accomplishment? Spiritually, the woman tried to seduce him, and he didn't give in. So he's connected to the holiness of his bris, if you understand what that means, right? That's his great accomplishment, is in that realm of self-control. Judah was not so exemplary in that realm, but he was exemplary that he admitted with his mouth. He admitted, which is connected to Thanksgiving, because let's understand the connection between Thanksgiving and admitting. He admitted that woman, he was really the culprit, and the woman should not be burned at the stake, should be brought into the family is what should happen, and that's what happened. But let's remember that Thanksgiving and admitting are connected. How? If you think about God, if you think about being thankful to God and admitting, what's the connection?
Yeah, you sometimes have to admit vulnerabilities and acknowledge
that there are weaknesses, and that's challenging. Being thankful.
So at the same time, sometimes people just don't.
What happens? That connected to being thankful?
Vulnerability connected to being thankful?
Because things are less than perfect.
And so why are you thankful? Because. There are many things to be thankful for, in spite of things.
But rather, because of those, even though we have these.
Despite these things. The classic idea is that generally a lot of us walk around not being thankful to God. We say, well, of course, I'm a rabbi and I have a family and that's magili, right? I deserve it, and after all, I work for it. And that's what usually, but to say, I admit that really I'm nothing and I deserve nothing. And God gave me all these things, so then I'm admitting and I'm thankful. So it relates to really realizing how vulnerable and how weak that I really am. Right? So then I don't feel entitled, and then I feel thankful. So they're connected. So Judah admitted with his mouth. So he reflects the covenant of the mouth. There's so many things in Judaism of the mouth, praising God, not speaking Lashon Hara, learning Torah. That's all the mouth. And kosher too. And then you have the bris. Obviously, the holiness is connected with like Joseph being pure in that sort of way, with men and women and things like that. So they reflect these two covenants, which apparently is very important in the thinking of the Sfat Emet, that these two covenants. They reflect these two covenants, and of course, the covenant of the mouth is connected to the Thanksgiving, and the other would be a thanks. In some of his other writings, he connects Joseph with something more hidden, Judah with something more external. So maybe we could say that here as well. There's Thanksgiving that's more in the heart. He mentioned heart and mouth. Joseph is more hidden. He's in jail and things like that. And Judah is going to be the king. He's going to be more outward. In any event, so now if you then go back and say, what did that rabbi just say? So, and why were people climbing? They literally, people like climbing on the trees to listen to him talk. Because it was fun, because he connected a lot of different things that people knew. And very often he would connect little Rashi that people were familiar with a little verse here and there. Look at the things he just connected. He connected a verse from the Daily Psalms. He connected another verse from the Daily Psalms, the Psalm of Thanksgiving. We say after Baruch Shamar in the early morning Psalms. So he's connecting the central idea, the two ideas of Hanukkah, of Hallel and Hodah, the Thanksgiving and the praise. He's connecting Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, which happened to be taking up the place at that time. So there's so much stuff going on. So you look here at the outline, the lens of association. Oh, I'm sorry, there was one more line to this section. I'll just read it myself. For all praise has to be from the inmost part of the heart and in practice in the speech of the mouth. So on the one hand, it has to be in the heart. The other hand, it has to be in the mouth. And all goes together. I don't know whether the heart and... you know, this idea of circumcision of the heart. I don't know whether the heart can be connected to different parts of the body. I'm not sure. Let's continue. So let's take a look at the outline of what we just went through. This lens of association, the interpreting and creating fun and exciting interpretations that really excited the mind of not only people in his era, but I would say that among the modern Orthodox, he's become a very popular commentator in the last 20 years. Why? Because of these fun associations. So look over here. It lays it out on page 2. You have Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh, two categories. Shabbat is like Yosef. Why? Because Yosef is a tzaddik. Tzaddik is like, it's sort of like, you know, the weekdays are like you know, regular Joes, regular, you know, like the rest of us. But Shabbos, if Shabbos was a person, it would be different than the other people. Joseph is different from the other brothers, right? So he's like the tzaddik, he's like the Chassidic Rebbe, so he's different, he's like Shabbat. And Yehuda is more like Rosh Chodesh. Yehuda's, you know, he's out there, he's a king in the real world, he's a leader. He has to go out there and, you know, kill people and manage and administer and administrate, and he's like Rosh Chodesh. What's Rosh Chodesh? Rosh Chodesh is, Rabbi Soloveitchik talked about the Rosh Chodesh man. Most of us are more like Rosh Chodesh man. We go to work, we look like everybody else, but in our minds we're thinking about Hanukkah, we're thinking about the davening, we're thinking about Adam 1 and Adam 2, we're thinking about different things. We have... So the holiness is sort of more within. I'm not sure which one is more inner or outer. But in any event, then we have Hallel praise. Somehow that connects with Shabbat more. And Hodah thanks is more like Rosh Chodesh, because on Rosh Chodesh maybe you have the Hallel. There's the Psalms of Thanksgiving that are done on Rosh Chodesh. Right? Thanks is related to Judah. So the Judah side, if Judah is connected to Rosh Chodesh, then Rosh Chodesh has thanks. Because Judah admitted wrong. Maybe the Hallel is more connected to Joseph. We're going to see later at the bottom that in another year, in 1890, he talked about the Hallel. The Talmud says, well, Hallel is all about, you know, Exodus of Egypt and things that happened in the past. I said, no, Hallel is all about the future. So really, Hallel is about both. It's about the end of days, and it's about the great glory of the past. So. Yeah, I would think so. That when you see, only say Hallel occasionally, yeah, I would think it's more special.
The concept of being able to praise is...
Well, I don't know higher. It's different.
You see... In terms of Shabbat that we're talking about?
Hodah, thanks might be higher, even though it's daily. The rabbis say daily things are more important than things that happen occasionally. Also, you know, we shouldn't only thank God for miracles and things, the great miracles of the past, miracles of the future. But I'm thinking that Joseph might be more connected to the dreams of the future, and Judah is more connected to the present. I'm not sure.
So it's not about one being on a higher level than
God. Right.
Even like Yosef, is Yosef on a higher level than Judah? Not necessarily.
If we talk about who's the tzaddik, right. It's a different, right. Right. He's the Rosh Kollel, but he's the holy Baal Bos. Yeah, so yeah. They're both important, but yes, I mean, generally a tzaddik is higher than a... When I say tzaddik, I mean the Hasidic Rebbe. Hasidic Rebbe is higher than someone else, so then in that sense, Yosef is higher. But, yeah, clearly, I mean, Judah's the king, so Judah's... it's a good question. I don't know, let's see. As we go through, let's see. In Kabbalah, they're different. They're different midot. I don't know enough about Kabbalah to know which midah is Judah. Yosef is famous. Yosef is Yisod. Yosef, you have to look at the image of the body, of, you know, the Kabbalistic image of the body. So he is, because of, again, what we talked about before, he represents the middle of the body. He might be Malchut, good. He might be the crown. Ah, good. Yeah, good. There might be. Judah might be the crown. Yeah. Joseph is the male organ, because he represents That's Yesod, the foundation which connects connects all the spherot. It's the sixth of the spherot. So all the first six spherot connect through the Yesod. So in the spherot, there's never a higher or lower. There isn't. Yeah. The Yesod is very high because it culminates all the things that are before it down here. But if Yehuda's crown, it might be Keter, Lenny might be right. The crown is the upper part of the body, but this part of the body is also very important. So it's hard to say more important, less important. Then we go to the gates. Yeah, here he does make a judgment. He says the gates are greater than the courtyard. Let's see. Did he say that?
No.
Did I get that wrong? The courtyard should be greater than the gates. Yeah. I think I may have put the arrow in the wrong direction. Yeah, is that what he said? I would think the courtyard is greater. Yeah, so there's a judgment. Ms. Rudinsky is asking for a judgment. The courtyard is greater, it's closer. Well, it depends how you got there. Yeah. If it was close, if you're close because you didn't deserve it, that's thanks, and that's Judah. But yeah, maybe there should be another note here. Maybe Joseph is there because he deserves it. He's a tzaddik. He deserves to be in the courtyard because he's a tzaddik. So he's higher. He's in the courtyard and he deserves it. Judah's in the courtyard, but he doesn't deserve it. So he's lower. But let's see. The courtyard... Are they both going into the courtyard? Or is one stuck in the gates? We started off by saying that on Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, the gates are open. But then, we said the gates you come in with Todah. Yeah, that's why Judah is associated with Todah. So the gates he's stuck at the gate. But the Tehillah, which might be Joseph, he's in the Chatzer. So he might come in closer. But to the extent that Judah gets in, he gets in by kindness, and for that he has to be thankful. And then you have the two swords which correspond to the Hallel and Hodah. Hallel is also, maybe Hallel might be in the heart, Hodah might be in the mouth, maybe the other way around, I'm not sure. And then he also mentions the possibility that one or Yosef relates to Yesod and Judah to Hodah, which maybe relates to one of these upper spherot, the Kabbalistic ideas that are connected to the head. And then we mentioned the two covenants, the Bris Milah covenant and the Praise of the Mouth covenant. And finally, we mentioned in 1890, he said that Hallel is both past and future, but it doesn't say that here, but the Hodah, Thanksgiving, is always usually for the past. So Hallel is superior in that sense, that it's for both. So Joseph is more future-oriented. Maybe that relates to his dreams as well. He's more future-oriented. Rabbi Soloveitchik had a whole essay about how Joseph turned to his brothers and said, "You guys are in the wrong economy. We should be getting into wheat. Why are you guys shepherds? We should be getting into wheat." And eventually Joseph goes to Egypt and he gets into wheat big time. He's in wheat futures. And anyway, so Joseph is more future-oriented. Any event, so I don't know if this is the best example of the connectedness, but I thought it gives you a basic sense of how his game, his fun, his craft is to connect ideas together. It's particularly fun for the audience if he's connecting things that we're familiar with, like verses from the morning prayers and things like that. He's connecting the different holidays. Of course, that's every rabbi's job, you know, these few weeks is to connect Joseph and Hanukkah and everything else. And he was an expert at connecting them. So he if it was Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Hanukkah, and also Parshas Miketz, and he was talking about Joseph and Judah, he's got it all in one thing. So it's the lens of association. Now I'd like to take a look at the Sfas Emes from a different perspective. As I was thinking about these issues of the different lenses, I started to realize that especially one particular article I'll reference later, that the Sfas Emes and among many Hasidic commentators, and Hasidim have their own genre of commentary. I mean, on the one hand, they're very fanciful, and they often jump off of ideas and very loose interpretations. There are all kinds of different tendencies that Hasidic rabbis have. One of the things is, and the Rebbe of Slonim calls it Al Derech HaAvoda, meaning we're reading the story, not storybooks. We're not interested in what happened between Judah and Joseph. We're interested in how does it help me worship God better. So that's Al Derech HaAvoda. The only question that's important is, how does it help me in my Avoda, in my worship of God? So here I say, maybe we're talking about Sfat Emet looks at the Torah through the lens of personal meaning. How does it help me worship God better, be a better Jew, better human being, better person? So here I have some examples, and then I'm going to take it to a final step of even higher step of what we talk about, taking this personal meaning. So let's take a few snippets of examples. These are not the full pieces. These are little snippets. And let's go around again. Hopefully, Elaine will start with you this time.
Wife of Potiphar, because he thought that he is, after all, ready to give his life for the Holy One, blessed be he. For every Israelite is prepared to give their life for the three sins which we must die for, if the Creator would, as that you be an offering, you would agree. And so how could he listen to his evil inclination in a manner that posed no threat to his life? And the truth is that this calculation helps every person to save them from sin as he remembers that he is prepared to give his life for the commandment of the Creator.
So, now, on the one hand, there's a certain Hasidic and modern yeshiva sort of tendency here, and that is that we say, oh, Joseph overcame a great temptation. He says, wait a minute, overcame a great temptation? This is Joseph we're dealing with here. Overcame a great temptation. There was no temptation. Why would he think that for Joseph there's no temptation? Why?
Because he's saying he's such a
tzaddik. Right, he's such a great tzaddik. So temptation. He didn't have temptation. That's sort of one approach.
That's what the Sfas Emes is.
Sfas Emes would probably. I didn't do a full study of this, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's part of that camp. Again, we saw the Ramban not part of that camp. He throws the book at Abraham, you know, like 10 times. You know, it doesn't bother him at all. But this is a different school, which tends to be true in modern Hasidic circles, modern yeshiva circles. You don't criticize the forefather. So even to suggest that he overcame temptation, which is a compliment, assumes that he could have been tempted. And then we say, well, how could it be? And then, but that's because he's assuming that he's a big tzaddik. But then he says something else that applies to all of us, and that is, wouldn't anyone in this room, if we had to say, okay, there's a crisis in Israel, they changed the embassy, now there's a big fight, they need everyone to join the army. Wouldn't we all join? And if our lives would be in danger, wouldn't we give in? What are you supposed to do? You know, you have to be in the army, you have no choice. And if someone said, worship idols, and we're Jews, we wouldn't worship idols. And so after all, this temptation he was tempted with is one of the three cardinal sins which you're supposed to give your life. So everybody would do that. You don't have to be special to do that. So he says, after all, if God would ask you, I'm sorry, the typo is here, if God would ask you, hey, would you put yourself as a sacrifice on the altar? You would say, oh, of course, you know, for God, I want to do God's will. We're all like Isaac, right? So he says, now we can understand Al Derech HaAvoda, as the Rebbe of Slonim would say, and here's the lens of personal meaning. What does this tell me about how I can overcome evil inclination? You have to think straight, like Joseph would think. What would he think? What should a person say? What's the calculation again, the last sentence?
I think he said, this wasn't a matter of life and death, so this is, that she, Potiphar's wife threw him, so it wasn't like he was going to be killed, or if he did do this, for sure
right.
He did. So the thing is, so if it's not a matter of life and death, then of course I could, why would I give in to my evil inclination, something that's,
Right.
Is that what I think about
that? That's one idea, but also that if If it was a more, take temptation out of it. Someone just said, you know, worship this idol, do this immoral act, kill this person, or I'll kill you. Right? So most of us are, kill someone, I'm not going to kill somebody. So, come on, God, I'll kill you. He said, well, I don't care, I'm not going to kill anybody. So, so he said, if we think of it that way, that that I'm ready to give my life for God. So then certainly this which is less than being asked to be on the altar, certainly, I'll be, yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think you're right. It's less than being asked to give your life. If God would ask me to give my life, I would do it. I believe that every member of my shul would give their life for Judaism if it were put in a circumstance like that. I really believe that. Well, we take our Judaism seriously. Thank God we don't. In America, we don't have to put our lives on the line too often. I believe everyone would do that. Why not? But then we have certain temptations, so we can't stand up to any temptation. Why not? So he says, I have an idea. Think about it and say to yourself, wouldn't you be willing to give your life for anything for God? So then surely you shouldn't give in to this temptation. So he's trying to read the Torah story in terms of what advice can it give me in my life. Next. Barbara.
God called the light day. Yes, every day the Holy One, blessed be He, renews with His goodness the act of creation. So every day the Holy One, blessed be He, gives it each day a point of stirring up in every person of Israel to cling to Him. And that is what it says, what I command you today. Every day it is as if it is new.
This is a big belief of Sfas Emes, that every Hanukkah, the idea of miraculousness is stirred up. Every Pesach, the idea of Exodus and getting out of your straits and trouble is stirred up. Every Shavuot, the Torah is given again. And here he takes a step further. Every day, the Torah is given anew, and I'm given a chance to renew, and I have a chance to cling to God again. I have a chance to stir up my passions again. So it's not when I'm reading Genesis, and I'm reading that the light was good. That's not just on the first day. That's every day. There's a new light. Every day of the week stirs up this. God says, let there be light. There's a new opportunity to cling to God. He reads the text for personal meaning and personal ramifications for himself.
But you could see why people would connect with it. Because why would the average person be so excited to hear that?
Right.
Every day have that opportunity.
One local rabbi once said, we shouldn't say Passover commemorates the ancient exodus of the Jews from Egypt, right? So that's always something we get that lesson. And Shavuos commemorates the ancient Israelites receiving the Torah. And you go to this rabbi and he says, we're getting it again today, right now. We're doing it again.
This is Rav Nachman. I remember Cindy telling me this concept is a Rav Nachman idea.
Also?
So Rav Nachman came.
Before, yes. I don't know if the chain. Yeah, I don't know if the chain. Yes, the I believe that the Levi Yitzchak, who was also very early, said this idea that let's say that Hanukkah happens every year again.
Every moment. It's a new beginning, like brand new, as if for the first time.
I mean, the words are they're in the early morning prayers. Am Chadesh Mitzvah V'Chol Yom Tamid. That God renews Genesis every day. But for a Rebbe to say, that's my sermon for today, that we're going to feel that. So it's powerful. Next. Four from this way. Four from this way. The Sfadem and Chaisar.
Eliezer, we can learn to be saved even in the place of darkness. And so too for every person in Israel, his soul was sent to this world. The world of darkness and through tefillah and oral law we can be saved. And this is the way of the weekdays, which are called darkness, and everything is fixed in work and hashgacha.
Yeah. So it's a simple story like Eliezer, right? Eliezer, he was sent on this mission impossible. He has to go to this other country and find a girl for his. I mean, if no girls are good enough locally, how's he going to find a girl over there? All of a sudden, he gets just the right family and a wonderful girl. It's incredible, and everything happens. So we learn from that we're also sent. He was a messenger, and we're also sent to this world. Our neshama was sent here in a dark world, but through prayer, like Eliezer, who prayed that he should find the bride, and through the Torah, we can be saved. And It's similar to the, like, during the week, we do work, not only the physical work that we do in our offices, but that we do the spiritual work that we do during the week, and then we can fix everything, we can tikkun, fix everything, like Eliezer fixed everything, and we can get out of the darkness. So, you know, what a great message. Here are these people, they're in Poland, they can't make a living, they're stuck in the mud, and it's freezing, and a lot of problems. And he says, Eliezer got out of the darkness, we can get out of the darkness. He's reading the text as it's personal. Every story is personal. We're going to Barbara. There's two Barbara's in here. Go ahead. Barbara, read them. Page 4.
And though the taste, became clear, that that point of Abraham, our forefather, of blessing him is in every person who is here. With his power, he can overcome all the
hiddenness
in this world, for the 10 tests correspond to all aspects of hiddenness in this world, and one who chooses their ways with a full
heart
to cling into and know himself to him and has help from all the work of our forefathers.
So firstly, there's a certain mystical point, and I have to admit, as a non-Chassid, it's a little complicated for me to understand this exactly, but he claims that there's a point of Avraham in all of us. Right? So, you know, we have Bris here tomorrow. Bris, Avraham, there's a little bit of Avraham in everyone. But I think a more rational point that he's making also, and that's why I think the Sfasemis can always be read on two levels. Because if you don't buy into this idea that there's a little piece of Avraham in everybody, and it's hard to accept this piece. But on the other hand, he's also saying something that's a universal point, which is that the story of Avraham and how he overcame these 10 trials, he says, those trials were so varied that basically it covers any kind of what? Any kind of trials, travails, and any kind of darkness that we might face, Avraham did it already. And if I've got a little piece of Avraham in me, then it's saying that what? We shall overcome. We can overcome anything because Abraham did it. We can do it. And we just have to cling. The only trick is you have to cling to God. That's the ultimate role of a Jew. And then he gets to a Hasidic idea, which you annul yourself to God. Like, you start imagining, I'm little, God is great. I'm even littler, God is even greater. Before you know it, you're using a mathematical term, what do they say in calculus? You reduce yourself to nothing, to nothing, and God to infinity. And then, you know, and when you get to that point, it's like annulment of self. And that's when you really discover yourself, when you annul yourself. Anyway, another point that I personally, as a non-Chassid, I don't particularly connect with that point, but the idea that, the more normative point, that when you cling to God, then you can make it through hardships. I think that's a point everyone can get out of this right. So there are a lot of particular Hasidic ideas that I sometimes, if you don't know this, I've been preaching out of the Sfas Emes for years. You look at my Sfas Emes, it's well worn. But I have to admit that because I'm not a Chassid, I do sort of have to sort of ignore certain pieces that are a little more Kabbalistic, that are, you know, that's for the real Chassidim. Some Rabbi Weinberg, who once said, head of the OU, he said that if you don't do the avoid of the Sfas Emes, if you don't do the work and join him in considering every day to be a new day, and say that you can make it through the darkness. If you don't do that work, then you have no right to read the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes is work. It's not. We're going to get to this in one second. It's work. It's not a commentary. We're here to work on ourselves through the biblical story. Next, Lenny.
Jacob was in Paran, and then he remembered to go back to the ground.
So this is a midrash that it says that something that indicates that all of a sudden he went back to Beit El. What do you mean? He went from his father, Yisav in Beit El, saw the dream of the ladder, then he went on. And the rabbi said, no. He said he went to Haran, and then all of a sudden he had a dream in Beit El. What happened was he went all the way to where he was supposed to go, and then he said, wait a second, I passed Beit El, I have to go back. So then he goes back, but when he goes back, the ground jumps, and he got there in like 2 seconds. It was like a miracle. He got there and he said, that's a midrash. It's not a Hasidic, that's a midrash. Continue.
And that which says there's a ground shock, except that we can learn from this for everyone in Israel, that you should know that there is no place that you cannot feel the inner light from the true work.
In other words, even though you're over there, you through true work, you can be over here. You can get back to that warm and fuzzy place where you want to be, no matter where you are. Now, there's a slight anti-Zionistic point here that no matter where you are, you can get there. You can get to Israel from outside. It's interesting. He was an anti-Zionist, but he did try to he was on a Agudas, the Aguda movement, who were originally anti-Zionist and became sort of non-Zionist. But there is a cute story how he tried to work with he was a very warm man, obviously. So he tried to work with Rav Kook. When he came to Israel for a visit, he tried to work with Rav Kook and tried to work out some kind of compromise that people should stop like throwing things at Rav Kook, you know, who was a Zionist rabbi. So there was some interesting that I don't have all the stories with me right now. But let's continue. So you can get there. All right, let's see. Yeah. All right. Let's. One second. Just make sure. Yeah. Okay. I think we have enough time for. Let's continue. Whose turn is it, doctor?
I heard from the honored grandfather.
No. Before you do that, I am smaller. So this is based on a verse that says, "I am smaller." Read.
I am smaller than all the kindness that you have done to your servant.
Okay. So Jacob says to God, "Wow, you've given me all this great stuff. I've got a family. I've got sheep and camel, and I'm just so humbled by everything you've done for me. I feel so small compared to all the kindness you've done. Go ahead.
I heard from the honored grandfather and my teacher in the name of the holy Rabbi of Lublin.
So here's that chain. Again, he's not a student of his father who died yet when he was young. He's a student of his grandfather, and who was the first Ger Rebbe. And he was the holy Rabbi of Lublin. I think it'd be Tzadok, but I'm not sure. But continue.
That which he is small in his eyes is a kindness from Hashem that he be blessed. And it seems that we can add that every person in Israel can achieve humility and smallness by the kindness of Hashem, may he be blessed, that he does for humanity beyond what is necessary. From this, every person should achieve humility.
So we too, again, he's reading it in terms of, how can I feel small? I want to feel small. Again, the Hasidic goal is to feel like nothing. How can I be a nothing? So he says, well, every time you get a kindness, you can feel, wow, I'm too small. So you can achieve this as well. Let's continue.
That in every moment there are straits.
So you know, here I'm using the word straits. Challenges. Go ahead.
Mitzrayim sounds like Mitzrayim, Egypt, but every person of Israel. Therefore, we mention the Exodus from Mitzrayim every day, and according to how we remember and know that God took us out, we don't have to be in the actual strait.
So he says this both on Pesach, we're trying to get out of our straits, but also every day when we mention the Exodus, you're just saying, God, get me out of my... Why do you have to mention the Exodus every day? To remember the ancient times when the Jews went out of Egypt? No, it has nothing to do with ancient times. It has to do with you today. We're all trying to get out of our straits and our difficult challenges. And the word straits has to do with it means, is Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim sounds like Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is Egypt. And we're all trying to get out of Egypt all the time. So every day we have to remember that we don't have to be in the actual straits. You don't have to be in your straits. It doesn't have to be like this. We don't have to be in trouble. We can get out. Nice to have a little something on Hanukkah. Bakasha. Elaine?
And this is the idea of, and I shall dwell in their midst, for according to what the person purifies for himself, every person of Israel for the tabernacle and the Beit HaMikdash is found in every neshama, as we say, every day it is pure.
I'm sorry, some of the typos here. But basically, he's saying something which can be a little radical, can be a little anti-Zionistic, but you don't have to take it that way. And that is that when God says, you build me a sanctuary and I will live in your midst, so the main thing is that God can live in your midst. Very mystical idea. And therefore, according to your level on which you are, right, every person can what? Of Israel? I'm sorry, a little typo there. The idea is that the Mishkan is found. I'm sorry, the English is mistaken. The Mishkan is and the Beit HaMikdash are found in every person. And it's found through your soul. Through your soul, you have the Beit. What is the Beit HaMikdash? It's not a building. It's the presence of divine, the divine. Well, the presence of the divine is in your soul. So in every person is the Beis HaMikdash. So on Hanukkah, when we light the menorah, we remember that we can light our own Hanukkah in our own heart, and something like that. So that we're rededicating our own soul to be a resting place for God, and to be a Beit HaMikdash. So again, Hanukkah is not about some ancient commemoration, it's about me being a temple of God now. Again, these are very lofty ideas, and that's an interesting question I faced over the years, you know, in trying to preach out of the Sfas Emes. So let's say you're a rabbi and you're giving a sermon based on this, and we have to be a temple. And then I walk home and I say, am I a temple? I mean, can anyone be a temple? I mean, what are we talking about? You know, in other words, he's shooting very high. He's preaching very high.
I don't understand why you're saying it's anti-Zionist.
It's
from just this.
I'm aware in general that there's a lot of preaching that goes on in the 19th century which says that whether you're Hasidic and you say that this town is so holy it's like Jerusalem, and it's not only the Reform who are saying that Berlin is Jerusalem. The Hasidim are saying that this shtetl is so holy, it's just like this.
Memphis, when I was born, that was called the Jerusalem of the South.
Memphis, Jerusalem of the South.
When I was growing up here, that's what we called it. You know, I think
every area has a Jerusalem.
Every ethnic
we had a speaker at the Shabbos who was contrasting Judaism and Christianity. He said, our Messiah has to actually save you. You can't just be saved in your heart. Read this Sfas Emes. What did we say before? He said that God will save you. The very first one. And that Eliezer, we learned that you can be saved even in your place of darkness. It's a certain imagery. There's an idea that, yeah. And so I find it sort of everywhere. Yeah. You're right. It's not particularly here, but it's
you think
all
that's
over.
The implication.
Yes. Now we turn to something that I found an article by a certain Eli Holzer, wrote a Hebrew article about the work of Paul Ricoeur, I don't know how to pronounce it, who wrote in English about the work of the text. The work of the text, meaning that you don't just read a book. He's talking about text in general, okay? Any book. That sometimes there's the work of the text to do the we're calling it in Hebrew al derech avoda, to do the work that the text requires of you, that the text has an effect on the person. This will be our last section. The text has an effect on you. I think we've already seen that, right? That he's saying, what does this text mean for me? So what's the work of the text? But he gives an example of this particular Sfas Emes from 1878 on Bo about tefillin, where I think the example is even deeper than the examples we gave until now. So let's go around one more time. Lenny.
In the verse, it says the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth, the first links the Torah to
it. Okay, the Torah says you should wear the tefillin on your arm and on your head, between your eyes, so that the Torah should be in your lips. Mm-hmm. So, and then why do we wear it on our arm? Because we went out of Egypt. So there's a connection between Egypt and the Torah. So what's the link between the Torah and Egypt? Of course, you know, we went out of Egypt, then we got the Torah. You know, what exactly is it? Go ahead, Barbara.
And so in action, they did not get the Torah until after Exodus.
It's not just conceptually, but in action, meaning in history, in reality, they also, what did they do? They did, go ahead. They didn't get the Torah, go ahead.
After Exodus, and so it is all for all.
Okay, so in all generations it works the same way, that you have Exodus first and Torah second. Go ahead.
According to how they stir up the idea of Exodus, they merit the Torah.
In other words, here's the idea of stirring up the idea. Remember that, in other words, there are these ideas, there's Hanukkah, and it's latent in Hanukkah, and we have to stir it up to have renewal on Hanukkah. There's renewal every day, and we have to stir it up to get the renewal every day. There's Exodus happening on Pesach, we have to stir it up. So if you can stir up the Exodus every day, then every day you can merit the Torah. Continue.
So So we put the mention of Exodus before the Shema every day, for it is the main part of the Torah to speak thereof.
One way we learn Torah every day is by saying the Shema. Where is the Shema? The Shema is in Deuteronomy. So when we say the Shema, what are you doing? You're learning Torah. But before we learn Torah, what do? We mention the Exodus. He says it before, but part of the Shema is the Exodus. Go ahead, Doctor.
Is verbal?
Before that, the idea. There's a little one line answer.
The idea is that the main power
is verbal. I'm sorry, I had a problem with the computer. Okay. The idea is that the main power is verbal. Now, the main power we have as human beings is our verbal ability. Go ahead.
Is verbal? Oh, I see. To admit.
Sorry.
The idea is that the main power is verbal, to admit true sayings, as it says, they are life to those who find.
Motza is someone who finds something. It's also something you take out, you emit. So those who, the Torah is a lifesaver for those who emit the words. You have to say the words of Torah.
And we can't emit those sayings until we become free of the strait and the prevention of the expansion of our inner self, which is the main idea of Egypt, the opposite of largesse.
So in other words, let's unpack that. Right? We have free restraints of the straits, and we have to prevent the and we have to free ourselves of the prevention of the expansion of our inner self. Our inner self wants to, in a bubble, like children. You know, you have a child, and they have wonderful personality, and they want to spread their wings, and they want to. And Egypt says, you know, shut up, be quiet, you know, don't do your thing. So we want to spread our wings. We want to be spiritual. We want to soar to the heaven. And Egypt. So it confines you, it's a strict, right? So anything that we want to be free of all those forces, go ahead.
Which is the main idea of Egypt, the opposite of largesse. And Egypt included all oppression.
So Egypt is not Egypt. Egypt is any kind of oppression, like the trials and travails of Abraham were not those trials, they're all trials you could ever have. And Egypt is any kind of oppression.
And by remembering the Exodus, it stirs the power of redemption in all areas of stress, where everything is included in Exodus.
Right. So, you know, isn't this, it's a panacea? You know, you read about the Exodus, and you realize that you can be free from any kind of stress that you have, and you study the Torah, and then you'll be ready to. Which comes first? Is the Torah first, and then Exodus second, or is it the other way around?
Exodus first,
and then Torah, and then you'll be free. So what he wants to say, based on Paul Ricoeur, so what's the work of the text? How does the text do its work?
You have to fit yourself into the text. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to let the text inform your life. Mm-hmm. So the text is a part of your life, and you have to be part of the text. It works back and forth. Mm-hmm.
So I think he's saying, look how concrete this idea, the work of the text becomes very concrete in the Svasemus, because when you read about the Exodus, that does a certain work. It's as if you went out of Egypt and then you can get the Torah. So every day as you read the story of the Exodus, you're not reading something. You're doing a work. It's the work of the text. And then it has a power, and it affects something, and then you can get the Torah. And
you're a player. You're not just an observer.
Yes. You're not just a reader. You're an actor. You're an actor. Right. It's not about Abraham. It's about you. Abraham's in you. It's not about the Exodus. It's about you. It's not about the triumph.
Yeah, a little bit of Abraham. You the story. You know, his story.
His story.
Is passed down.
Well, that's keeping it out of you. He's saying he is in you, right? Right.
Well, I mean,
right. But
Abraham,
that.
But Abraham's and who he is, his essence of Abraham has been passed down like spiritual genes.
Right. So you're trying to translate. Right. I love what you're doing. What you're trying to do. We're trying to mediate between. this very mystical idea that Abraham's in you. It's a tough one. So you're using spiritual DNA. You're using, it's his story. I think his story, that's getting a little far away from where he's trying to make, it's not a story. He's saying it's not a story, it's you.
He's the Abraham in you, yeah.
Well, that's as far than I want to go. Yeah, I think, right, when you read this story, right, well, we all know that sometimes you're affected by something you read, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I was so affected by that. Okay, I've never seen him again. Mm-hmm. But we have to do the work of it. Not the story has a magical effect on you. We have to talk about Hanukkah. Well, the holidays could just go right through us, you know, like in one ear and out the other. But if we have to do the work of Hanukkah, picture if we did the work throughout the year of the Sfas Emes's exercise plan, right? It's someone described it as spiritual training. The Vanderwald's, Lindsay's father was talking about spiritual training. It's unbelievable what goes on. You every stage of the year, I don't have all the ideas in my head in a second of what Rosh Hashanah and Kippur and everything means in his world, but today we just saw two examples of Hanukkah, Pesach, and Shavuos. We're doing the work. You renew yourself every day. You renew yourself, especially on Hanukkah. You feel the potential for miraculous to get out of your straight Hanukkah. You, on Pesach, and every day by mentioning Pesach, mentioning Exodus, you have this renewal. You have the possibility of getting out of straits. After all of our troubles are straits. That means you have the potential. Every story you read about getting out of trouble, like Eliezer, it helps you get out of trouble. It helps you realize that you can get out of trouble. And then you have to do the work to embrace God, to embrace the Torah, to embrace these stories as yours, as part of you. And there's nothing special about nothing special about the Exodus, nothing special about the Maccabees, nothing special about Abraham. You are as special as they are.
I don't know if it's the same thing, but my grandmother lived with us, and she was a very, very religious, very, very firm lady. And when she read, and she had next to her her sitter and her tzenarena, etc. But when she read that tzenarena and that parsha every single day, she was living it. And I don't know if this is the same thing, mm-hmm. but it was. These were her people. This was her family. These were her children. These were her parents. It's a very different experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was not a book. It was not distant. It was that moment.
So, the lens. What lens is this? What should I have called this? What lens? What lens is it? Sorry?
Tortured.
A tortured lens? By which you mean what?
I thought you said poetry.
No, the connections are so tortured.
Oh, okay. So tonight I presented two ideas. I'm afraid they're not connected to each other. One, because I had advertised that Svadamit, the master of association. So the association can sometimes be tortured, right? But it was sort of the fun of it that you could connect all these disparate ideas. How many ideas could he connect in 20 minutes? I don't know how long these talks were. These are just the notes that he wrote after Shabbat. But how many ideas did he get? And sometimes they can be tortured connected, but they're fun. Then the second idea we had tonight is that he helps you live the story and do the work of the story. And what would you call that? What lens is that?
Experiential.
Experiential lens, good. Maybe the personal lens, the personal lens. Mm-hmm. Right? You read yourself into the story.
Is that what Paul?
The work of the text has an effect on you. Yeah. I'm sorry. I should have brought more passages from Ricker, but you can look it up. In any event, so I hope you appreciate that this Bas Emes is a very special personality, and you understand why he all of a sudden he had a meteoric rise. Again, it's a small world of modern Orthodox rabbis and right-wing rabbis who took an interest in him, but the number of editions of, you know, when I was growing up, this is the only edition you can get, now you can get this edition, that edition. There's an explosion of art school. There's an explosion of interest in the Sfas Emes. He's ever, you know, in any English write-up of something, they always say, you know, they'll always quote him among everybody else. There's an explosion of interest in him, and you don't have to be a Ger Chassid to have that interest. It's because look how modern this is. it's all about you, right? It's a personal reading. It's a self-help book. It's right. I mean, this everything is so modern about this. So he's I kind of enjoy his timing because I mean, those are my years, you know, like the 78, I'm thinking of 1870, 1870, I'm thinking, 19, you know, he died in 1905, but he preached until 1903, you know, I'm thinking 2003, you know, it's like, we lived at the other side of a different century, you know, some of you even more so, he was connecting with people, and it still resonates very much, and it's a wonderful lens through which to see the Torah, but a very challenging one, a very challenging one. Because you can't just read it and go home. You gotta do the work and keep thinking about it.
Say it mentally. That section is talking about.
Yes.
Mentally or maybe.
Yes.
Is he?
Yeah. Right. That's the thing. Now, theoretically, it's a different world because this is Poland and that's Lithuania and this is Hasidic and that's Yeshivish and all that. But I think. Firstly, this Fasem has good credentials because he's a major Talmudist. Again, some people view him as one of the later writers, who cares? But again, I was saying that my teacher, one of my colleagues and teachers, Ray Rosenzweig, said that no, he's as analytical as the best of them. So he has his credentials. But this is Hasidic stuff, but I think you will find his works on the shelf of any yeshiva student anyway. But
you know, Rav Shai used to quote him, I think, every Friday.
Right. I think I had some influence on that.
Yeah, but
yes, he would, right, Rav Shai had an exercise, which is interesting, of trying to, he didn't just quote this five times every Friday night, but he also tried to think of what, how can we translate that into some modern messages. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Moshe Tarragon has a wonderful, on the YU Torah, very much sharing. That's like 5 minutes, 5 minutes every day. And he was here once as, I think, one of your scholars that you brought, Rabbi Tarragon, and very, in a very articulate, modern kind of way, he brings out Tzvat Semes' thoughts. Beautiful.
So there's an English translation of the Torah portion?
I don't know. There's my cousin wrote up something, Tzvat Emet. His name is Leff, L-E-F-F. But that's like snippets. But I would say one thing that's really excellent is the art scroll on, I'm not always recommending, you know, random art scroll things. Talmud, of course, is very outstanding, but they did a good job on art scroll on the three regalim, on the Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. There's one thick volume, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, and that's when the Tzvat Semes shines. I would say there's no comparison of the Tzvat Semes on a regular parsha and Tzvat Semes on the holidays. And on the holidays, it's just three times as much material.
I have an English translation of holidays that was.
It's not new. It's not new. It's about maybe 2000.
No, I'm saying this. It's not art scroll.
Oh,
so it was Jason Aronson.
Oh,
you don't know.
Maybe you're wrong. Oh, good.
Yeah.
My if you want to hear my story? Story goes like this. My Gary Rebbe story. First, my mother-in-law is related to the Gary Rebbe. Her cousin, the Holocaust survivor, was a commoner who's related to his father's mother. And my mother-in-law went to Israel. She went to meet one of the descendants of the Gera Rebbe, and he met with her. It was very nice. She always had a nice experience. But the story goes like this: that my wife's great-great-grandfather was such a respected rabbi in the town that he let him play the lottery. But then he had a dream of what the right number was, and he won twice. So when he won the second time, they took away his money. So he went to the, even though he was a Rebbe, he went to the Gera Rebbe to get an access and advice. What should he do? I don't know which Rebbe it would be at that time. I'm not sure. Maybe been the Hujarim, the grandfather. What should I do? They're taking away my mills. With my money, I bought grain mills. What should I do? He said, don't worry, they'll beg you to take it back. The grandfather went away wondering, how does the Rebbe know they're going to beg me to take it back? Well, it turns out they had rats. They got rats. And they begged him to take it back, and he got his money back, and it all worked out. So that was our Gary Rebbe's time. All right. Thank you for joining us.